Conference Committee will come to order. We left off going through the comparison of Senate Article 3, I believe.
Yep.
And so if you could just point out where we were and we can...
Madam Chair and members, we're in Article 3, the Senate Section 8 and House Section 6. Sits on page 5 of the comparison summary if you're following, or page R6 of the actual comparison bill. Madam Chair, Senate Section 8, House Section 6. This is a conforming change related to the increase in the inpatient hospital limit, which was occurred in the previous section. So that they're the same corresponding differences in effective date. Next section is Senate Section 9, House Section 7. These sections increase the Minnesota care income limit for families and children from 275 to 300% of the federal poverty guidelines. They also eliminate what's sometimes called the hard income limit of $50,000 for parents on Minnesota care. There are differences in effective date, and the Senate effective date says that this increase is contingent on meeting cost containment goals and having sufficient funding. Then Senate Section 10, House Section 8, this increases the Minnesota care income limit for adults without children to 300% of poverty. And again, the same effective date difference between the bills.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peason.
Thank you. Just a fiscal question. On the way the Senate is doing the effective date, how is the department allocating that? How are they fiscal noting that? Are they putting a fiscal cost on that or not?
I mean, on the...
On all these changes that are contingent on meeting cost containment.
We're tracking the costs because they were paid for out of the health care access fund so that we would not be spending that money on something else, so that we wouldn't have the money available. This was something that the governor had asked for in his original negotiations. I realize we're now in a position where we're negotiating against ourselves with him, but this was originally what he had requested.
Just to clarify, Madam Chair, then, so there is actually a fiscal note that shows the cost of this just to hold those dollars so they don't get
yes.
spent twice. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, do you know what the effective date that kicks that in is? And you don't have to, I don't have to have that all right now, but.
Representative Thiessen, and the assumption in our spreadsheet is that we will meet the cost containment goal.
Okay.
At the date that we set. Anticipate we would.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we're on Senate Section 11, House Section 9. This deals with the renewal of eligibility, and there's a difference in paragraph B for the House. States that the commissioner shall designate locations where enrollees may submit renewals, and these locations then submit the renewal forms to the commissioner. The Senate states that the enrollee may renew eligibility at designated locations if there's no change in income or assets. Paragraph D is a grace month for Minnesota Care for persons who fail to submit renewal forms in a timely manner. So it provides a grace month. It's identical in both bills. And then for the overall section, there's a difference in the effective date. Senate Section 12, House Section 10 provides a delayed verification for Minnesota Care applicants with gross incomes less than 90% of the program income standard. There's some differences in wording throughout the bill, throughout the section. The House states that people are eligible upon payment of premiums. The Senate that they're eligible beginning in the month of application. House refers to people being denied or canceled eligibility. The Senate refers to eligibility being terminated. And then there are technical differences and differences in effective date.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
I notice on the last article, paragraph D, section 12 and section 13, we have differences in dates. Has DHS weighed in on whether they're able to make the 2009 dates for this, these provisions?
Representative Norton, if you could just clarify for Mr. Godfrey which changes you're inquiring about.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. It's Section 11, Section 12, and Section 13. I just noticed between the two bills that the Senate has January 1st, 2009, and the House has January 1st, 2010. And I was wondering if this was my recollection is that we have the outdate based on DHS being able to comply in a timely manner. And I'm just wondering if my recollections are correct and if the Senate had a discussion with DHS about that.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Godfrey,
Representative Norton, this will be maybe a little clearer once we get to the tracking, but my understanding is for the non-eligibility expansions that both the House and the Senate pick up, there are different effective dates, and they're based on the idea that in the Senate bill that the effective date would, I believe it's January 1st, 09, or upon federal approval. And in effect, what the DHS has said for that effective date is that it could begin effective July 1st of 09, which would be half of fiscal year 10 in the tracking. And so that's the soonest we were able to get that implemented.
And members, since we both have to rebalance the healthcare access fund in our positions, we have suggested that we do that before we go through the spreadsheet because it'll all get changed anyway. And our target for doing that is tomorrow. Hopefully we'll do that, and then we'll each be in a position where we can negotiate with each other against a balanced fund.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is maybe a very technical question for staff or possibly for DHS, but is there a difference between terminated and denied or canceled in terms of language and effect?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, the House language was language that was suggested by DHS. I think they believe that using those terms would be the correct terminology rather than terminated. So it's a DHS suggestion that's in the House language.
Thank you, Mr. Chun.
Why don't we continue going through the differences?
Madam Chair, we're in Senate Section 13, House Section 11. This provides a grace month for Minnesota Care enrollees who do not pay their premiums. Again, there's an effective date difference. Otherwise, the language is identical. Senate Section 14, House Section 12. This is additional language that removes the $50,000 cap on parental income on Minnesota Care, and there are differences in the effective date for these sections. Then Senate Section 15, House Section 13, this removes the requirement that Minnesota Care applicants and enrollees have no health coverage for at least 4 months prior to application and renewal, and it makes some conforming changes. There are differences in effective date, and there are also differences in how the Senate and House strike language to accomplish this.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Senate staff, the effective dates, one of the key differences between the House and the Senate is the concept of having sufficient funding for the expansion, and have you defined sufficient somewhere in the bill, or however you contributed?
Representative Loeffler, the two concepts go together. This was an agreement that Representative Huntley and I had made with the governor, and the idea was, first of all, that you meet certain cost containment goals that are outlined in the bill, and secondly, that you have enough revenue to pay for the expansion. Because if you don't have enough money to pay for the expansion, obviously you can't do it automatically. But the way the bill would work, if there is enough revenue and we meet our cost containment goals, is that this eligibility limit would automatically be in effect. There'd be no more legislative action that would be needed.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up to that. Since you have that language in a variety of different provisions, do you at some point sort of rank order them so that, you know, if the money is sufficient for two out of the four, or I don't know exactly how many there are, but you see it kind of in a variety of different sections, that you can have partial implementation?
I think the only place that applies is when we're expanding eligibility. And I think we only have one eligibility expansion in the bill. It might be showing up in a number of places, but it's all about the same thing. Other questions? Let's continue then.
Madam Chair, the next section is Health Section 14. This would require Minnesota CARE applicants and enrollees who are convicted of a drug offense to pay a fee of $150 if they test positive for an illegal controlled substance, and then they would be permanently disqualified if they have a second positive test result. Senate Section 16, this is Senate only. This removes the sunset for language that would authorize the commissioner to pay Minnesota CARE premiums for military families. Senate Section 17, Health Section 15 would require Minnesota CARE enrollees to pay premiums based on a new affordability scale. That would be in Article 4 of the bill. The differences are that the House requires children at or below 150% of poverty to pay a $4 monthly premium. The Senate would remove premiums for children with incomes at or below 150% of poverty and parents with incomes below 100% of poverty. And then there are differences in the effective date and some technical differences as well. Senate Section 18, Health Section 16, this exempts new enrollee households from the first month of Minnesota CARE premiums. And there are differences in the effective date. Senate Section 19 is Senate only. It creates a July 1 of 2008 effective date for the change in income. In the change in the definition of income for self-employed farmers, this was the not adding back of depreciation. So, this would occur regardless of whether or not federal funding was approved. Then,
Madam Chair, thank you. So, what is that? Why did we have the federal approval before? What's the implication of that? Does that mean we're just paying all that with state funds?
That would be correct. We believe it'll be probably a year before we get approval and implement with approval. So some of our members were very anxious for this provision to take effect prior to the time we would get the federal funding.
Madam Chair, the next section is House Section 17. This matches up with the Senate Article 5, Section 3, which is a rider. This requires the Commissioner of Human Services to study and report to the legislature recommendations for a rate increase for long-term care workers to be used to purchase employee health insurance. And there are only technical differences here. Then Senate Section 20 and House Section 18 repeal an existing $4 monthly Minnesota CARE premium for low-income children. And this is sort of reinstated in previous sections. And there's some technical differences and a difference in the effective date. And that would conclude Article 3.
Any other questions about this section, this article? Let's go on to the next article.
Madam Chair, I'm going to cover Article 3 of the House bill, which is three sections, House only. If you're following in the revisers side by side, these three sections appear at the beginning of Article, what the revisers summary side by side calls Article 4. The first of these three sections deals with high deductible health plans and the premiums charged for them, and requires that the The health plan companies keep track of the difference in experience, if any, under high deductible health plans as opposed to others, and take that difference into account when deciding on premium increases from year to year, and they're required to provide that information to the commissioner for when they apply for the commissioner's approval of their rate premium rates. Yeah. Section 2 deals with a uniform outcome measures working group. This requires the Transformation Commission to establish an informal working group to develop a standardized, a limited set of measurements for health provider performance. And those could be used for purposes of pay-for-performance payment systems, statewide health improvement goals, and in measuring progress on those goals. It requires a report to the legislature by December 15, 2008, and the report must include recommendations for a standardized set of provider performance measures and a methodology to reduce state health program capitation rates for providers that use performance measures other than those in the standardized set. Section 3 deals with community benefit standards for nonprofit health plan companies. This would be basically HMOs and Blue Cross, and requires the commissioner to recommend to the legislature community benefit standards to be required by law, including reporting requirements and an enforcement mechanism. And those recommendations would be due December 15, 2008.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this goes to a discussion we had last night. So for staff, would this section also apply to those counties engaged in county-based purchasing?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, no, not as it's written now. It would apply only to licensed nonprofit health plan companies, which would be HMOs and Blue Cross and I think Delta Dental probably.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Continue.
Madam Chair, the next is Article 4, Senate Article 4. And I'll be working off the summary. The first section is a Senate-only provision, and this adds language to the practices chapter and states that the data collected by the Healthcare Transformation Commission would be governed under a section in the commission statutes. Section 2 is a Senate-only section, and this creates the Health Savings Reinvestment Fund. Requires the Commission of Finance to transfer from the fund to the general fund beginning July 1st, 2010, an amount that's equal to the loss of income tax revenue that's attributable to the use of Section 125 plans. Section 3 is Senate only. This adds language that exempts certain individual health plans, and these are the health plans that someone purchases through a Section 125 plan during the annual open enrollment period, that those individual health plans would not or would be exempt from the premium rate restrictions. Section 4 is Senate only, and this is related as well to the Section 125 plans, and this clarifies that an employer who offers a group health plan under which the employee is eligible for coverage would not be eligible for MCHIP. Section 5 is Senate only as well. This requires hospitals and healthcare providers when implementing an interoperable health record system within their hospital or clinical practice to use the electronic health record that is certified by the Certification Commission for Healthcare Information Technology. Section 6 is Senate only, and this establishes an electronic prescription drug program. Section 7 is Senate only, and Section 8 is Senate only, and both of these make conforming changes to current statutes, and they correspond with changes that are anticipated in the payment reform. And I believe that's Section 9 as well. Section 10, again, is the same thing, as these are changes in current statute that correspond with the anticipated changes with the payment reform. Section 11 in the Senate and Section 1 in the House defines the terms used for chapter, the new Chapter 62U. And House has the House-only definitions, advisory committee and state health care programs, Senate-only definitions are baskets or baskets of care, group purchaser, participating provider, provider or health care provider, Section 125 plan, service agreements. Then there are some identical definitions. There are minor differences between the definitions of clinically effective and cost effective. The Senate states that clinically effective is the use of a particular health technology that improves patient clinical status, and the House uses improves or prevents a decline in patient clinical status, and the same differences in the definition of cost-effective. Section 12 of the Senate is Senate-only, and this establishes a registration for health insurance access brokers. Section 13 is Senate-only, and this requires certain employers to establish a Section 125 plans.
And just to be clear, this requirement only applies to employers who don't offer health care coverage and are 50 or less.
Senate Section 14 and House Section 2 establishes the Health Care Transformation Commission. Subdivision 1 in both the Senate and House are the creation is the title of Subdivision 1 that's identical. Subdivision 2 membership of the commission. There's a difference in numbers. House has 13 members. Senate has 10. The House has four non-legislators appointed by Senate, four non-legislators appointed by House, and five members appointed by the governor, two who will be commissioners. Senate has two public members and one senator appointed by the Senate, two public members and one House member appointed by the House, and four members appointed by the governor, who will be commissioners. The Senate requires non-legislator or non-commissioner members to have expertise in health care financing, delivery, quality improvement, health economics, actuarial science, and business operations. And the House has that, and then includes health disparities, culturally competent care, social services funded through health public funds, or to be an informed consumer representative. Senate requires members not to be a state employee or employees of a political division or have a direct financial interest in the outcome of the commission's business. The House doesn't have this provision. The Senate specifies that Section 15.0575 governs the removal of members, and the House simply states that the entity appointing the original member would replace an outgoing member. The Senate has a provision that states that the members are not public officials, and that they must file a statement of economic interest. And the House doesn't have that provision. Or I think we said they are public officials, so and then they have to file the statement. Subdivision 3 defines the operations of the commission, and there are minor differences throughout the subdivision due to the guidelines that the Senate puts in their state and local government committee. State or the Senate specifies that the Commissioner of Health shall convene the first meeting on or before July 1, 2008. It specifies that the election of the chair should be within their membership, permits the commission to appoint an executive commissioner that will be a state employee and can hire staff, and specifies that the expenses are compensated under Section 15.0575, and the House specifies the commission shall convene on or before July 1, 2008. Specifies the election of a chair among the members and specifies that the members shall not be compensated except for actual expenses. The House also adds a provision that specifies that 60% of the members are required for a quorum and that the majority of 60% of the membership is needed to approve or adopt a recommendation related to the performance of duties. The Senate does not have this. Subdivision 4 is a House only. It's immunity of liability. The Senate has removed that, so it doesn't have that subdivision. Subdivision 4 in the Senate and Subdivision 5 of the House deal with the responsibilities of the commission. The main difference here is the Senate establishes an advisory committee to advise the commission on a design and implementation plan for a health care payment restructuring system. And the House does not have this advisory committee. The Senate also has the commission making recommendations to the governor and legislature on how to incorporate Medicare into the restructuring system. The Senate also has language that authorizes the Commission Advisory Committee to contract with other organizations to carry out this, their duties. And the House has that in another subdivision. And then the Senate sunsets the Advisory Committee July 1st, 2012. And the House as a provision that requires providers to obtain signed and written consent from patients before providing patient information that identifies patients to the commission. It requires the commission to adopt rules for certain of their duties that are described in the clauses 1, 3, 5, and 9. You can read in the summary. Subdivision 6 of this section is House only, and this gives the commission the power to advise the Commissioner of Human Services on federal policy changes for future transformation of the healthcare system. The Senate doesn't have this. Subdivision 5 of the Senate and Subdivision 7 of the House, but the benefit design, benefit set and design, requires the commission to establish an advisory committee, and this is identical in both the Senate and the House. Senate section subdivision 6 and House subdivision 8 deal with the reports that the commission are required to submit to the governor and legislature. And there are some technical differences, but otherwise this is identical. And Senate Subdivision 7 and House Subdivision 9 deal with the commission sunset. The Senate sunsets it June 30th, 2012, and then shifts the commission duties to the Health Care Value Reporting Committee upon expiration. House sunsets the commission December 31st, 2013, and then is silent on what happens to the duties after expiration. Senate Section 15 is Senate only, and it establishes the Health Care Value Reporting Committee. And for the purpose of collecting and analyzing and disseminating data on health care quality.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
I'd just like to point out to members that we have in Article 3 a group called Uniform Outcome Measuring Working Group that is pretty similar to what the Senate calls the Healthcare Value Reporting Committee. Deal with the same issues.
Senate Section 16 and House Section 3 establish the Health Benefit and Design Advisory Committee. Subdivision 1, the creation of the advisory committee. The differences are that the House has the recommendations of this committee going to the legislature. The Senate has the recommendations going to the commission. And they add language that requires the commission to appoint the members of the advisory committee by August 15th, 2008. It doesn't specify a date for the appointments. There are then our minor technical differences in this subdivision. Subdivision 2 is the operation of this advisory committee. There are minor differences, again, attributed to the guidelines, Senate guidelines. Senate requires, Senate requires the chair of the commission to convene the first meeting. The House simply has the committee meeting. The Senate requires the Health Care Value Committee to oversee the benefit set and design advisory committee upon the expiration of the commission. House requires the Commissioner of Health to oversee this committee upon expiration of the commission. House Subdivision 3 is House only. That deals with immunity, liability. Again, the Senate has removed that, so it doesn't have it. Senate Subdivision 3, House Subdivision 4 are the duties of this advisory committee. And the differences here, in paragraph A, the Senate requires the committee to submit to the commission initial cost-effective benefit set and design by January 15, 2009. And the House requires the committee to submit it to the legislature, and they don't say initial cost-effective benefit set. They just refer to a benefit set and design by January 1, 2009. There are other minor technical differences here. Paragraph B is identical. Paragraph C, the Senate refers to ICSI-designated evidence-based outpatient care, and the House refers to simply evidence-based and specifies that the committee may consult with ICSI. Paragraph D, the Senate requires the design to include a maximum deductible for in-network benefits and prescription drugs and a maximum for out-of-pocket costs. And the House specifies that the benefit design is the only plan eligible for premium subsidies and requires each health plan company in the individual and small employer market to offer at least one plan that complies with the benefits design. The House also requires the design to establish a number of maximum cost-sharing variations based on deductibles and maximum out-of-pocket costs and states that there are to be no maximum lifetime benefit. Subdivision 4 in the Senate and Subdivision 5 of the House deals with continued review, and this is identical except for some technical differences. Section 4 of the House is House only, and this deals with the goals of universal coverage. And Subdivision 1 specifies a timeline of phasing in goals for achieving universal coverage. Subdivision 2 talks about the percentage of the population that has to have insurance that will be determined through an annual population survey. Section 17 of the Senate is Senate only, and this establishes the Health Technology Assessment Advisory Committee. Senate Section 18, Section 8, this is the payment restructuring based on incentive payments on quality of care. Subdivision 1 deals with the development. And this, the Senate requires the commission by January 1, 2009 to develop a system of quality incentive payments to link the level of payments to providers to the quality of care, and requires the system to incorporate payments to primary care physicians, specialty care physicians, health care clinics, and hospitals eligible for these incentive payments. And it then specifies that section 62Q.101 doesn't apply to the system. House requires the commission by January 15, 2009, report to the legislature on rules to implement a payment system linking the level of payments to providers to the quality of care. Requires the payment system to incorporate systems or incorporate payments to primary care physicians, specialty care physicians, healthcare clinics, hospitals, and then adds, and other providers who provide services included in the evidence-based benefit set and design. Requires the commission to adopt rules to implement this system by January 1st, 2010. Subdivision 2 is the payment system criteria. There are some minor differences. House refers in Clause 1 refers to quality-based payments. The Senate refers to quality incentive payments. In Clause 2, the priority must be placed on measures of health care outcomes rather than the Senate says processes, the House says process measures. Clause 3 deals with quality measures, and the House says that quality measures must focus on preventive services, coronary artery, heart disease, et cetera. The Senate says that they shall include these. And the House adds other conditions or procedures for which improved outcomes will lead to significant cost savings, so they don't limit it. Clause 4 is House only, and this requires quality measures must be based on medical evidence and developed through a consensus process in which providers participate. Clause 4 in the Senate, Clause 5 in the House. The House states that quality measures for specialty care must be designated by the commission, and the Senate states that the quality measures for specialty care shall be initially based on quality indicators measured and reported by specialty societies. Clause 5 in the Senate and Clause 6 in the House. The House states that hospital payments must be adjusted for quality using existing measures which focus on health conditions in which improved outcomes will lead to significant cost savings. And the House, or the Senate has hospital measures shall be initially based on existing quality measures. Senate Clause 6 and House Clause 7, the House states that to the extent possible, quality targets must be adjusted for variation in patient populations to reduce incentives for providers to locate outside areas with high poverty, et cetera. And the Senate states that to the extent possible, quality measures must be adjusted for variation in patient population. Clause 8 is House only, and this states that payment methods must adjust for racial, ethnic, and language factors that affect outcomes. And Clause 9 is House only, and that states that quality measures cannot be different from those recommended by the Uniform Outcome Measures Working Group. Senate Clause 7 and House Clause 10, House states that other indicators of care quality must be incorporated and must include disparities between racial and ethnic populations. The Senate states that other indicators of care quality may be incorporated. Subdivision 3, it talks about uniform measures, and it's House only. And states that once the payment system is established, it would prohibit health plan companies from requiring providers to use and report health plan company-specific quality and outcome measures. Subdivision 4 is a house only, and this requires the committee to review payment restructuring on an ongoing basis and adjust the payment system as necessary. And Senate Subdivision 3 and House Subdivision 5 deals with the implementation of the system. The Senate, the date of implementation for the state public health care program, CGIP, and health plan companies is July 1, 2009. And the House, the date of implementation for enrollees served under fee-for-service in the public health care programs and then by managed care and county-based purchasing. They separate these two. And then CGIP and health plan companies is July 1, 2010. Senate Section 19 and House Section 9, this is a section that deals with the payment restructuring system for care coordination. And there is differences in the title and the heading of this section. Subdivision 1, the development of this system. The Senate requires the commission to develop a system by July 1, 2009 and states that to be eligible, provider must be certified as a health care home by the Commissioner of Health. The House specifies no date to develop the system and requires the Commission to develop a payment system in cooperation with Commissioners of Health and Human Services. It requires the providers to be certified by the Commissioners of Health and Human Services. Subdivision 2 deals with the care coordination fee. Paragraph A, the Senate refers to care coordination payments and care coordination fee payment system. It requires the health care homes to directly manage on-site or employ care coordinators. And the House refers to payment system or care coordination payment system in this paragraph and requires health care homes to utilize care coordination or care coordinators. There are other minor technical differences. In paragraph B, the Senate states that the care coordination fees may be varied. The House says that they must be varied. Paragraph C, the Senate requires the commission to develop the system of care coordination fees to consider additional time and resources needed by patients that have limited English and cultural differences or other barriers. And the House requires group purchasers in setting the care coordination fees to consider these differences. Paragraph B, the Senate states that the fees must be applied first to individuals who have or who are at risk of developing complex or chronic health conditions. And the House has the fees applied first to persons who have complex and chronic health conditions. In Subdivision 3, there's differences in the heading of this. And then the Senate states that the care coordination fees are in addition to the quality incentive payments. The House states that the quality-based payments, when established, must also be included in the care coordination payment system. And Subdivision 4 is the implementation of this payment system. Senate has the implementation date of July 1, 2009 for the state public health care program, CGIP, and the health plan companies, and then it authorizes DHS and DOER to begin implementation with enrollees and participants who have or who are at risk of developing complex and chronic health conditions. And the House implementation is the same date, but they have language that specifies fee-for-service enrollees and then enrollees served under managed care plans and county-based purchasing, and then CGIP and health plan companies. Section 10 is a house only, and this requires coordination with the private sector and would, in developing the payment systems, require the commission to consult and coordinate with the commissioners of health and human services and various other stakeholders. and then would require the commissioners to publicize and promote the payment systems and make other technical assistance available. Section 20 of the Senate and Section 11 of the House, this is the payment restructuring entitled Provider Innovation to Improve Cost and Quality. Subdivision 1 deals with the development of this system. Paragraph A, the Senate requires by January 15, 2009, the Commission to report to the legislature recommendations for advancing an innovative payment system for chronic condition of coronary artery, heart disease, diabetes, asthma, pulmonary disease, and depression. The House requires by January 15, 2009, the Commission shall report to the legislature on recommendations for advancing an innovative payment system for providing necessary services to patients, including but not limited to patients with chronic conditions that are specified in the Senate language. Paragraph B is identical. Paragraph C is House only, and it states that by January 1st of 2010, the Commission shall develop and present to the legislature recommendations for a comparable payment system for public health care programs and additional changes necessary to implement this payment. Paragraph C in the Senate and paragraph D in the House, that's identical. Subdivision 2 deals with encounter data, and this language is identical except for paragraphs E and F. And in these paragraphs, the Senate requires the Commission, states that the Commission may publish analyses and reports that identify specific providers, but only after the provider has been provided an opportunity to review data and submit comments. Then the provider has 21 days to review and comment, and any comments submitted will be released with the data. And the House language requires the commissioner, or I'm sorry, the commission to report back to the providers the analyses and reports that identify specific providers. And then the provider has 21 days to review, and it requires the commission to establish an appeals process to resolve any disputes. Senate Subdivision 3, and this is House Subdivision 3 as well, deals with utilization and health care costs. The difference is here. In paragraph A, the Senate states that the Commission shall develop a method of calculating the relative utilization and health care costs of providers. And it states that the method must exclude cost of catastrophic cases and include risk adjustments to reflect demographics, health, and special needs of the provider's patient population. And the House language states that the Commission shall establish a uniform definition and methodology. And it states that the methodology must include risk adjustment mechanisms that address health status, worsening of patients' condition, socioeconomic and cultural factors, percentage of individuals served by the provider or care system whose care is paid by public health insurance programs and who require specialized care or who benefit from medical education. Paragraph B is identical. Paragraph C, the Senate requires the Commission to develop a system to index providers based on the total risk-adjusted resource use and quality of care, and separately for the conditions of coronary artery and heart disease, diabetes, asthma, pulmonary disease, and depression. And the House requires the Commission to develop this system for the specified conditions and not for the total risk-adjusted resource use and quality care. Then there are technical differences. Subdivision 4, there is a differences in the heading. Then other differences, it's paragraph A. The Senate requires the Commission to develop a standard method and format for providers to use for submitting care package prices for total care of cost of care or separately for the conditions of coronary artery, heart disease, diabetes, asthma, pulmonary disease, and depression. And the House requires the Commission to develop this method and format for submitting packages of care for only those specified conditions, not for the total cost of care. Paragraph B, the Senate, beginning July 1, 2010, and annually thereafter, permits providers to submit package prices to the Commission for the cost of providing all necessary services to a patient, and separately for the cost of providing services for patients with the chronic conditions that have been identified, and requires the package prices submitted to reflect the provider's commitment to manage their risk-adjusted patient population within this cost. And the House, beginning July 1, 2010, permits providers to submit the package prices for the cost of providing necessary services for the specified conditions, but not for the cost of providing all necessary services, and requires the package prices submitted to reflect the provider's commitment to manage the provider's treatment of patients and the specified chronic conditions. Paragraph C, the Senate states that no provider shall submit a package price for the risk-adjusted total cost of care, and then otherwise it's identical. The House limits this provision to risk-adjusted cost of care for the specified conditions. Paragraph D, the Senate requires the published results of the processes to include all providers effective January 1, 2012, and the House doesn't contain this language. Subdivision 5 deals with provider assistance and requires the Commission to provide education and technical assistance to the providers. The Senate would require education assistance be provided to calculate and submit package prices for the risk-adjusted cost of care for the total cost of care, and then separately for the specified conditions. The House simply refers to the cost of care for the specified conditions. Subdivision 6 deals with the payments and requires the Senate requires the Commission to establish a method to pay providers who submitted package prices for their total cost of care or separately for their cost of care in treating the specified chronic conditions. And it requires the method to include periodic adjustments to payments to reflect the provider's actual risk-adjusted costs relative to their package price. And the House requires the Commission to establish a method to pay providers who submitted package prices for their cost of care in treating the specified conditions with periodic adjustments to the payment that they received to reflect their actual risk-adjusted costs relative to the package price. And it requires the Commission to report to the legislature recommendations on how to implement the adjustments. The House also adds a paragraph B, but that is similar to Senate Section 22 and is compared there. Subdivision 7 is implementation, and the Senate's implementation date is January 1, 2012. For DHS and the healthcare programs, DOER and CGIP, political subdivisions, health plan companies to use the information and methods developed to develop products that encourage consumers to use high quality and low cost providers. And then requires health plan companies that issue plans in the individual and small employer market to offer at least one health plan that uses information developed to establish financial incentives for consumers to choose high-quality or low-cost providers through enrollee cost-sharing or selective provider networks. And the House does not include DHS and the public health care programs in their implementation list. And requires health plan companies to use the information and methods developed to develop at least one health plan that encourages consumers to use high-quality and low-cost providers. And then they also require health plan companies that issue plans in the individual and small employer market to offer at least one health plan that uses the information developed to establish financial incentives for the consumers to use the high-quality, low-cost provider. The House adds a provision that requires the legislature to approve the commission's plan to implement this section before it may be implemented. And Section 21 of the Senate and Section 12 of the House deals with provider price and quality disclosure. And in paragraph A, the Senate requires, beginning January 1, 2009, and annually thereafter, each physician clinic and hospital to establish a list of prices for each health care procedure, service, package of services, or basket of care the provider and have the provider provide this electronically to the commission, and states that this should be provided to the public upon request and no cost. The House requires this beginning January 1, 2010, and adds that the form and manner specified for providing this information must be at minimal cost to the provider. In paragraph B, Senate requires the commission to develop a plan that requires all health care providers to comply with paragraph A beginning January 1, 2010. The House requires compliance by January 1, 2012, and the House has additional language that states that health plan companies are required to submit provider price information to the commission for purposes of paragraph A for providers who do not submit prices to the commission for analysis and provider cost performance purposes. Paragraph C is Senate only. And this requires each provider to submit standardized electronic information on the outcomes and processes associated with patient care to the Health Care Value Reporting Committee. Senate Section 22 and House Section 11, and this is Subdivision 6, Paragraph B, is where this language is found in the House. And this deals with provider pricing. And the Senate here states that effective July 1, 2010, no provider shall vary the payment amount that the provider accepts as full payment for a health care service based on identity of the payer, contractual relationship, identity of patient, or whether coverage is through a group purchaser. And this section does not apply to a variation based on the payer being a government entity or workers' comp, or no-fault auto insurance payments. And the Senate states that this does not affect the right of a provider to provide charity care or care for a reduced price due to a financial hardship or the patient being a relative or friend. And the House states that no provider shall vary the payment amount that the provider accepts as payment in full for the package of services based on the identity of the payer, contractual relationship, identity of patient, or whether the coverage is through a group purchaser, and then states that this section does not apply to the services provided to patients who are enrolled in Medicare, and then workers' comp, no-fault insurance, or a state public health care program, and then has that same language that states that this does not affect the right of the provider to provide charity care or care for a reduced price due to financial hardship or due to the patient being a family member. There are other technical differences here. Senate Section 23 and House Section 5 deal with projected spending. The Senate Section 23 also establishes the savings recapture assessment. The House simply has the projected spending baseline and the actual spending. Subdivision 1, in the projected spending baseline, the Senate specifies calendar year and requires the projected growth in spending to be for the next 10 years. And it also states that Medicare and long-term care spending are not included in the calculations. The House specifies year and requires the projected growth to be for the next 5 years, and they don't exclude Medicare and long-term care spending. The actual spending in Subdivision 2, the difference is here. The Senate requires the commissioner, beginning January 1, 2010, to determine the actual private and public health care expenditures for the calendar year preceding the current calendar year based on data collected under Chapter 62J. It states that if the actual spending is less than projected spending, the commissioner is to determine an aggregate savings reinvestment amount and then requires health plan companies and third-party administrators to pay a savings investment reinvestment amount that does not exceed 33% of the aggregate savings. The House has language that requires the commissioner, beginning February 1, 2010, to determine the actual private and public health care spending for the calendar year preceding the current calendar year, and it does not have the language on determining the reinvestment amount or the assessment. And Subdivision 3 is the publication of spending, and the difference is here is the Senate requires the spending to be published by January 15th of each year, beginning January 15th, 2010. The House requires the spending to be published by by February 15th of each year, beginning February 15th of 2010. And Subdivisions 4 and 5, they are Senate only, and this establishes the reinvestment assessments and credits the revenue to the health savings reinvestment fund. Senate Section 24 is Senate only, and this establishes cost containment goals. Subdivision 1 establishes the cost containment goals based on the projected spending baseline. Subdivision 2 requires the Commissioner of Health to report to the Commissioner of Human Services and the legislature on whether the cost containment goals for 2009 that was met. And if the goal was met, then the commissioner shall expand eligibility of Minnesota Care to 300% effective July 1, 2010. 300%. Senate Section 25 and House Section 6 establishes the affordability standard. Subdivision 1 is the definition of affordability. The Senate adds language that for families and individuals with pre-tax income, affordability shall compare the net cost of coverage that includes pre-tax savings. The House doesn't have that. Otherwise, this subdivision is identical. Subdivision 2, there's a difference in the heading of this subdivision. And the Senate establishes a standard up to 300% of federal poverty guidelines, with the maximum percent of monthly income for 300% being 7%. And the table goes up to 300%. And the House has the table continuing up to 400%. And with the maximum percent of income monthly of the percent of monthly income for 300% being 6%, and for 400% is 8%. And the Senate has the 400% in another, it's in Subdivision 3, which is Senate only, and that has it going up to 10% of the monthly income. Senate Section 26 and House Section 7, this establishes employee subsidies for employer-subsidized coverage. There is a heading titled Difference here. And then in Subdivision 1, the establishment of the subsidy program, the Senate requires the Commissioner of Human Services to develop a plan for a subsidy program for eligible employees with access to employer-subsidized health coverage as defined in the Minnesota Care Program. The House requires the Commissioner of Human Services to establish a subsidy program for eligible employees and dependents to provide assistance in purchasing health coverage. In Subdivision 2, there is differences in the heading. In the Senate here defines an eligible employee as covered by employee subsidized insurance. coverage that meets or is actuarially equivalent to the benefit set and design established by the commission and requires the employee to meet the eligibility criteria for the Minnesota Care except for the insurance barrier requirements. The House defines eligible employees and dependents with gross income that does not exceed 300% of federal poverty, or the FPG. As covered by ESI coverage as defined in the Minnesota Care Program, and that requires the coverage to meet benefit sets and designs, the requirements established by the commission, and they must meet all the eligibility criteria for the Minnesota Care Program except for the insurance barriers. And subdivision three is a house.
I could just interrupt here to say that the major difference here, I think, is that the House is setting up a program for subsidies for employees, but they don't have any funding in the bill for it. Senate is asking the commissioner to develop a plan, and we give the commissioner some funding to develop the plan.
And, Madam Chair, I think the other difference is the Senate only goes up to 300% of poverty.
Of course, if you don't have to pay for it, you don't have to have them on that day.
Just point out the differences, Senator.
Madam Chair, I think the Senate has a 400% thing on 54.21. Is that different?
Well, they're limited to Minnesota Care, which is limited to the guidelines of Minnesota Care.
The subsidies we do.
Just trying to understand.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
We asked for a fiscal note on that, above 300%, and we are yet to receive it.
I think they would need to have a little, they probably need more information than you have in the bill to figure out what the cost would be. But I understand the problem with not being able to get fiscal notes, believe me. Continue.
Okay. And then subdivision three is the house only, and this extends the subsidies up to 400%. Subdivision 3 in the Senate, subdivision 4 in the House is the amount of subsidies, and the differences here is the Senate refers to employees, the House refers to employees and dependents. Subdivision 4 in the Senate, subdivision 5 in the House is the payment of the subsidy. The main difference here is the Senate has the subsidy amount being paid to the employer. The House has it being paid to the a health plan company. Then the House has additional language that states that any additional amount paid by the commissioner that exceeds the employee's premium share must be credited first toward the deductible and then toward the cost sharing. Senate doesn't have this language. Senate subdivision 5 is Senate only, and this requires the commissioner to submit the plan for the subsidy program to the legislature by January 15, 2009 for implementation by July 1 of 2009. And then there is effective dates differences. In Article in Section 13 of the House is House only, and this requires the Commissioners of Health, Commerce, and Finance to report to the legislature regarding changes in current laws relating to mandated benefits needed to comply with the standard benefit set and design that's going to be established. Section 14 is House only, and this creates a Risk Adjustment Advisory Council to review the current funding mechanism for MCHA and whether it should be replaced by another risk-spreading mechanism. And then House Section 16 and 17, these are in the budget bill on the Senate side in Article 9, Section 18 and 19.
So, members, there needs to be a decision made about these provisions as to whether they're going to be negotiated in the budget bill or in this bill.
Madam Chair, and there's funding in the omnibus bill.
Right.
There is no funding in here. They talk about to the extent available appropriations.
I understand. Just pointing out sort of what is the obvious, that you can't have a provision negotiated in two different bills, so we have to get a decision on that.
And then, Madam Chair, there are appropriations. House has Section 18. It appropriates $15 million from the Health Care Access Fund for the Transformation Commission. The Senate has it as a rider, and it appropriates $12 million. And the Senate has a number of repealers, and these repealers are tied to the payment reform. And that's it.
Are there any questions on this article? Well, I think the next article is really the appropriations article, and I think it might be best to hold on that until we revise our spreadsheets, since it might be a little bit different after that. And so are there non-appropriation riders that we might need to go through?
Sorry.
Are there non-appropriation riders that we should review?
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. I think they're all.
Okay. Well, if not, then.
Madam.
So then I think we would be finished with the work we have to do today. The plan is, as I said earlier, for each, the House and the Senate each, to bring in new spreadsheets to make sure we're not overspending the Health Care Access Fund. And then we could adopt those as our positions each for the conference committee, and we could review then the appropriations sections of the conference committee in regard to their differences. And we were shooting for tomorrow. I don't know if we're still on target for that.
Yeah, we can meet tomorrow, but I don't know the time yet.
Okay. So we will be adjourned to the call of the chair tomorrow, which will be Representative Hunt.
Are they tomorrow? Well, maybe they'll stay there.